This week in the other Bundesliga, there were three European games and a hangover of sorts for Salzburg, Sturm and LASK, with some shock Bundesliga scorelines on Saturday and Sunday. A very warm welcome to the Other Bundesliga podcast. My name is Tom Midler. I'm joined by Lee Wingate, and we are both at the Long Hall Pub and Kitchen in Vienna. That's our favourite place to come and record, and our favourite place in the city to come and have a beer and watch the football as well. Lee, great to be with you here at the Long Hall. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Very good, thanks. Very much looking forward to our trip to Salzburg to see the Austria-Salzburg, Red Bull-Salzburg derby, if we can call it that tomorrow.
Yeah. Big Cup week coming up. I mean, we're recording a sort of post-Europe and post-Bundesliga pod, but we'll obviously preview the Cup a little bit. And I'm looking forward to talking about all these big Cup games. Well, one in particular, very, very big Cup game on the next podcast. For this one, though, we'll have to have a few beers and talk Europe and Bundesliga. On that note, if you would like to buy us a beer, we've got a page on Buy Me a Coffee. It's buymeacoffee.com/otherbundesliga, as you'd expect. You can find us on there. And if you're liking the podcasts that we're producing, if you're liking all the content that we've been getting out on our Twitter covering Austrian football, or all the European pods, the Bundesliga pods as well, you can support us in the form of a beer, which would obviously be very lovely. And we would appreciate your support very, very much indeed. Thank you to those who've done it already. And thanks to anyone else who's thinking about it. Onto the topic of this week's pod, though. European hangovers, Lee. We won't have a European hangover unless lots of people buy us beers on buymeacoffee.com. But the three Austrian teams that played in Europe last week did have a bit of a hangover because none of them won their Bundesliga game on match day 8. And maybe slightly out of the blue, I'd like to start with LASK because they had a very big European game and we were both involved midweek in the Europa League for LASK against Liverpool. That was a fun one, wasn't it? Do you want to tell everybody what you were doing on Thursday night's game at the Oberösterreich Arena, as it was called in European action?
Yeah, sure. So it was a bit of a surprise, a bit of a late call. I was drafted in at the last minute to do the stadium announcements in English for the Liverpool fans, which was exciting and nerve-wracking. I would say in equal measure, but it wasn't. It was way more nerve-wracking than exciting, especially the point in time where I forgot Joel Matip's name and was just...
What did you call him?
I just said number 32 for Liverpool when I was announcing the substitution, and then I was like, hang on, what's his name? So there was just a bit of an awkward pause until LASK's stadium announcer, Wolfgang, very kindly pointed me in the direction of his name on the team sheet. But yeah, that's what I was doing. It was very interesting to see football from that level, because I think when you're in the crowd or you're watching on TV, you have like a better holistic view of the pitch. If a ball goes in the air, you roughly know where it's going to land, for example. It was very different watching down by the sidelines because you're at player level. I was right near Jurgen Klopp, who was berating the fourth official for most of the match. And the actual difficult thing for me is I was writing a match report for LASK at the same time that a cameraman had decided to put his tripod right in front of my table just so he could film Jurgen Klopp in the dugout. So that was less than
dedicated
ideal.
Dedicated Jurgen Klopp cam.
Yeah, literally. There was none for Thomas Sageda. Can you believe it? But yeah, it was great. And you were involved in a UEFA capacity as well. So.
Yes, I was the UEFA reporter. Actually, in the Europa League, you're the UEFA reporter for both teams if you do that job. In the Champions League, you're reporting just for the one team. Yeah, in this game, though, I was reporting for LASK and Liverpool. So doing my match updates on the official match centre and the UEFA Live, like the apps, the website and everything, which was really fun. So you could sort of get my analysis as the game went on. The only issue was, though, at LASK Stadium, it got so busy and the press area was so busy with people, obviously a lot of international interest in the game, that I think the theory goes that these days everyone's got sort of three devices. You've got your laptop, your phone, maybe another phone, you share your password with somebody else, and the internet was completely overrun at the Oberösterreich Arena, as it was called. And so I couldn't actually write any reports or updates during the game, which was my job. My job was to sit there. They gave me pretty much the best place in the house. You said yours was good, down by pitch side. I was like on the halfway line, raised up halfway, right where the TV cameras are. Perfect view. Except I had to go... A lot of the people would have seen me. I was sort of waving that, you know, the polite British smile to the people coming up the stairs. And I had to do it about 20 times during the game because I was running down into the office so I could send my update, hoping that nothing else happened, running back up to my seat, watch a few minutes of game, and then run back down again. So, yeah, it was a bit of a it was a difficult working day, but it was good fun and I enjoyed it. And I spoke to Florian Flecker afterwards, and Florian Flecker, of course, had put Lask ahead with a really nicely worked corner routine, came out to him just outside the box, took a touch, let it sort of bounce up, sit up in front of him and fired it in past Kevin Kelleher for a lovely 1-0 to Lask. And I spoke to him at the end, and you know players are always like, when they've scored a nice goal but they're on the losing team, they're like, yeah, it was a nice goal, but I'd rather it would have got a point for the team. I don't care if I score or not, as long as the team gets points. This was Florian Flecker, who seems like a lovely man, by the way, with a huge grin on his face. I was like, how did it feel to score that really nicely taken goal? And he was just beaming smile. He was just like, yeah, it was amazing. Like, honestly, it was so cool. It came off just as we planned it. Like, it was so nice. We worked on it in the training ground. It felt amazing. I thought, oh, that's really sweet. You don't see that very often.
Yeah, he comes across as a very bodenständig kind of guy, doesn't he? Down to earth kind of guy. And you can see from his celebration that it meant a lot to him. It also meant a great deal to everybody on the sidelines where I was standing, who pretty much went nuts when that goal went in, because it's one of those that if that happened in a game situation, that goes in 1 in 20, 30 times, you try that corner routine, simply because the first touch has to be perfect. Then you also need the gap. It went through a Liverpool player's legs, and then to fizz into the sort of, about, it was about a metre raised off the ground that it ended up going into the net. It was a wonderful goal.
Yeah, the celebration that you mentioned as well. I didn't actually see it because it was down in the corner and I had to sort of look down over the crowd. But he did like a big jump and a flip, which I was very impressed with when I saw the replay of that.
Yeah, no, I only saw that on the highlights because I was so focused on what was going on immediately around me and the ire of Mr. Klopp. But yeah, I saw on the highlights that he did a flip. I didn't know Florian had that in his locker. But
no, me neither. I was well impressed. I mean, ultimately, Liverpool did make a lot of changes. Jürgen Klopp was saying he was given all these noises about taking the game extremely seriously, which he did, to be fair. You know, it's not just about team selection, is it? He was taking it seriously. But there were loads of changes to the Liverpool lineup as well. However, ultimately, they came back strong in the second half. We thought Lask put in a very good first 45 minutes. But then the second half, Liverpool sort of ran out comfortable winners in the end. They did what they needed to do to make the class difference tell. I think the turning point, though, was the penalty. And it's a bit of a rough one for me. I'm not going to say that Lask would have won without it or anything like that. You know, you can't be too bold in what you assert with that. But I'm a bit disappointed that that was given, in all honesty.
Yeah, I see what you mean, because essentially what happened there was Luis Diaz tried to get to the ball just before Philip Zirkzee, and he didn't really care where it went because the ball went off to the side. It wasn't like he had it under control. The ball was out of his control, but he just needed to get there first so that when the tackle came in, it was a foul. And that was a little bit of a shame, because you think if he'd then set himself up for a clear scoring opportunity, then that would have maybe changed it in my mind a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversial penalty talk to come in the Bundesliga section too, but for this one, it reminded me of something on FIFA or on Pro Evo actually, where like he'd had his shot. He put his shot horribly wide, basically. He got there first, as you said, punted the shot way off target, and then the defensive intervention from Zierice was like aimed to block the shot coming in on target, but the shot went way off target and Zierice had sort of done a little slide. And then after the players finished shooting, his shooting motion, he decided to continue the motion so that he could make contact with Zierice, who was sort of just finishing the challenge motion. And it was like, ah, when that happens on Pro Evo, like the end of the animations come together and then you can see the free kick or a penalty sort of a good second after the ball is gone. You think, oh, come on, that's so unfair. And I thought in this case, it was very, very harsh on Lask. Thomas Sagida didn't complain. The Lask players didn't complain too much, but I think they got a bit of a rough deal there. I think if the striker's taken a shot, they've had their offensive action.
Was that a shot? It just looked like he was trying to touch the ball to the side, I think.
Yeah, but when he touched it to the side, as you say, he had, I mean, 0.0% chance of getting it. I mean, it was straight off into the hoardings wide of the goal, whether it was a shot or a touch, you know, as you say, like cleverly done to get there first. But for me, it's harsh. Like when you've had that chance and there's no chance then, you've done your offensive action and there's no chance then of retrieving the ball, I think that shouldn't have been a penalty. However, that doesn't change the fact that Liverpool were then very good value for the win. I thought Darwin Nunez had a really good game. Ryan Gravenberch set up the goal for 2-1. That was a really nicely taken goal for 2-1. Lask plugged away. Elias Havel, the youngster, tried to inject a bit of intensity and a bit of running in the offence. And they did trouble Kelleher, the Liverpool goalkeeper, a couple of times. But you thought once Liverpool had got back into the game, it was sort of always going to be theirs. Ultimately, the 3-1 was a goal that I missed because I was downstairs waiting to do the interviews and I was ready to ask questions about 2-1. So luckily I saw it on a screen that it was 3-1. But yeah, a fair enough result in the end. But also Lask did themselves proud, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think they can hold their heads up high. It's going to be still a difficult group for them because they've got French Cup winners Toulouse and Union Saint-Gilloise as well. I think they're up against Toulouse away next, so they obviously want to get some points on the board in that one.
Yes, no points expected from Liverpool. No points came from the Liverpool game. However, they were the first of our teams to look out for a European hangover this week because Lask then went and drew 0-0 with Hartberg this weekend. Hartberg, obviously, a better proposition perhaps this season than they have been in other seasons. It's not the walk over 3 points. I use that term with a lot of exaggeration. Hartberg is never a walk over 3 points, but you know, you'd expect Lask at home perhaps to take 3 points on this occasion. Both teams are flying pretty high in the Bundesliga, and Hartberg were well worthy, actually, of the 0-0 draw that they got on the weekend.
Yeah, if you look at the chances in this game, this must be the goalless draw with the biggest XG. Like, it was... I mean, Hartberg should have been 2-3 goals ahead at some point, especially the miss. Was it the ball across the face of goal? It was either...
Avdi from about 3 yards.
Mm-hmm. It was an awkward bounce, but nonetheless, you have to put that in the back of the net. And then to fast forward a little bit, just want to share my thoughts on the Lask penalty. I mean, I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit about the build-up, but I wanted to talk about the execution of the penalty. Because in a way, if you are right-footed and you are not going to put it in the bottom left corner as you look at it, then if you're going to put it like not across your body, you don't want to open up your body so clearly that the ball is going to go down in that corner. And I think from the way that Robert Zulu took that penalty and the way he shaped his body, it could only go into that corner. So I think it was a pretty big tell for me which way it was going to go. So it was quite surprising.
Ah, really interesting. Yeah, and Salinger got across really early. Actually, the thing I noticed, I hadn't noticed the body shape, because what I'd noticed is that this is nothing, taking nothing away from Salinger, really, and taking nothing away from Hartberg, who, as I said, fully deserved that point. Avdi hit the post just before he put it over. Hartberg combined brilliantly, especially in the first half on the counter. But Salinger was off his line when the penalty was taken and when it was saved. It was only by a millimetre or so. It was a very, very small margin. But you can see on the replay that when Giroud strikes the ball, Salinger's not on his line. And... I think if that was in the World Cup, you know, when some of these tournaments, they seem to look at it very stringently, and others, they seem to let it go. I'm all in favour of letting it go. You know, it's not something that I think needs to be a retake necessarily when it's that close. But by the letter of the law, I think you've got VAR. That should have been seen, should have been a retake. Nonetheless, Lask missed ultimately their best chance with the spot kick. Would have been incredibly harsh on Hartberg to lose. But again, Lask failing to pick up 3 points, a point... It's a good result for Hartberg in a way, but I think they'll be a little bit disappointed too after the way that first half went when it was all them. And Lask really did seem to be suffering that hangover, didn't they? They started so slowly.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this with Lask a little bit before, but the other two teams, I say that, we're about to talk about them both dropping points, but they do have a lot more consistency throughout the season. And I never, as much as I like watching Lask play, and I think they've got a lot of good players, I never fully have the same confidence that I do that they're going to get a result compared to when I watch Sturm or Salzburg.
Yeah, fair enough. 4 points off the top. They're still in good shape. Hartberg are up in the top six as well, continuing their excellent run of recent form. Let's move to Salzburg, the only one of the European winners from Austria midweek. And boy, did they pick up a big result, winning 2-0 away at Benfica in Lisbon. Incredible. That was such a mad game as well.
Yes, yeah, so theoretically, on paper, this was the toughest game that they would face because they were away to the Pot 1 team, the Portuguese champions. Obviously, we're going to have to talk about some very big early turning points in that match. But let's start with the penalties. And I was watching and please forgive me, it was just the way it was in the bar that I was in. But I ended up predominantly watching Man United's trip to Bayern Munich. I think you had a much better view of those penalties, so maybe I'll leave that analysis to you.
Yeah, I just thought Salzburg was so well set up for the game. It's funny to contrast it then with the Bundesliga game. No spoilers. You've surely heard the result by now if you're listening to the other Bundesliga podcast. However, Salzburg started so, so well in Lisbon. They really just caught Benfica cold. They were really well set up. They were really well managed, just directed to just be really brave and bold. I don't think Benfica were expecting it. It's like, you know, a boxing match and somebody just like going for the knockout right away. You think, well, nobody would do that. It's just completely ridiculously sort of an unsafe tactic. But they went for it and they got the penalty, which was blazed over by Karim Konate. I'm thinking, like, do you have such a young player on their Champions League debut take a penalty? And then I look around the Salzburg squad and I'm like, oh, well, basically the only senior player you could have to take that penalty is Alex Schlager. Mm-hmm. So there's like the only one who's comfortably over 20. So I don't know what you think about that, but is it just a case that there is basically no one else? It did seem like a big pressure situation for Konate to step up.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. But then again, with Salzburg, there's not that much older choice, as you say. And also, I think they just place the trust in youth, don't they? If you're good enough, you're old enough, kind of thing. Obviously, he didn't retain penalty-taking duties for the second one a short while later. That was scored by Roko Simic. I did think that incident was interesting. We've talked about that off-air, but the ball essentially looped over the Benfica goalkeeper and was it Antonio Silva on the line. Essentially, it bounced up and he used his hands to get it out of... Was it Konate coming running in?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It was such a bizarre passage of play. But again, though, Salzburg had carved Benfica open. They made a brilliant attack, got it down the left, loads of space. Keeper came out to the right-hand side of his area to close down the angle. And then he sort of made the save on the shot and you thought, okay, the attack's dead. It'll go off for a corner. But it didn't go off for a corner. It looped way up into the air. And as you said, sort of bounced down towards the goal line. It would have been a freak goal, but Silva got it all wrong on the line. Ended up sort of jumping when the ball was bouncing and then didn't know where it was going to go and had to sort of prod it out of the goal mouth with his hand. You're going to regret that, aren't you? So early in the game, it was about 16 minutes in, I think, or 15 minutes in. Red card and a penalty. It has to be. I know there's a double jeopardy rule, but obviously not in situations like that where you've pushed the ball out of the goal line, sort of a la Luis Suarez all those years ago. Like, Benfica should have just, you know, take the goal, go 1-0 down, and with 11 men, they probably could have regrouped. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just instinct kicking in that case, isn't it? I mean, I thought that Benfica's defending for both goals was quite questionable. I mean, the second one especially. But they definitely didn't do themselves any favours with that one. But still, even, you know, this young Salzburg team being away from home at the Estadio da Luz and then, you know, even though their opponents were down a man and they were up a goal, like, still, they could have crumbled. There's a lot of experience in that Benfica team, looking at the likes of Angel Di Maria in particular, and they still managed to see the result over the line.
Yeah, I mean, anyone Portuguese listening to this isn't going to be too impressed, but I didn't like the way Benfica played football. I've seen this a few times. Like, Benfica are good enough. Again, they're good enough not to take the red card and just go 1-0 down. But they're also good enough to play proper football against Salzburg and try and win. And I thought that they were so rattled. You know, Salzburg, it wouldn't happen like that every time. You're not going to be 2-0 up. You're not going to get that penalty, or two penalties, sorry, in the early stages of every game just because you play well at the start. But they deserved it. They played brilliantly. And just Benfica kind of froze in the first game for the first 15, 20 minutes. And I thought then when they settled, 10 men of Benfica were about as good as 11 men of Salzburg, which is a bit strange, but probably fair as well.
Do you remember last season when Karim Adeyemi won three penalties in the first half against Sevilla? Was it two out of the three? But there were three penalties in the first half. There must be some stat out there, someone must be able to find it, of the most penalties won by a club in the Champions League. Because Salzburg are going mental winning penalties at the moment.
Yeah, true. They must be pretty high up in the sort of penalties to games ratio. Mm. But, you know, when you spend a lot of time on the attack, that's the kind of thing that happens. Yeah, just to go back to what I was saying about Benfica, I thought they really were like going down to ground easily, like diving a little bit, like not diving, but those dives where you're like, you're waiting for the smallest bit of contact and you just flop to the ground. And they just, it's like, they knew they were going to get a free kick. Once the referees set that precedent, you know you're going to get one every time. And they just did it. And I think at the end of the day, it probably took momentum out of their game every bit as much as it did out of Salzburg's game. It's like, that's the kind of tactic you do when you're 1-0 up or 2-0 up at the Estadio de Luz. You stop Salzburg getting into the game by doing that. But once you're trailing, it wasn't in anyone's interest. And I thought Salzburg were fully deserving of it when they got the second goal. And that in itself came out of a bit of a bizarre passage of play. I said, I think Benfica really were matching Salzburg then 10-11, but Salzburg kept on pushing. They kept on going for it. They weren't going to sit back on the 1-0 against 10 men. They went for it again. And then when Benfica gave the ball away in midfield, there was literally a 4-on-0 break, which you don't see that very often. In the replay, you can see it breaks away as a 3-man break. And then it's still a fourth Salzburg player who's quickest to react and join the attack. So you've got four Salzburg players bearing down on the keeper and they simply couldn't miss. And they didn't. So, you know, credit to them.
Yeah, that really sort of, it's not something you see in adult football. I don't mean professional football, just adult football. You don't really see like a 4-on-1 or 4-on, well, it was 4-on-1 goalkeeper, wasn't it? But when they ran through, I was thinking the biggest danger, obviously, is the timing of the run. Because if you aren't Yeah, it was Dijon Kemeri, I think, that had the ball. And if you aren't going to square that across or touch it to the side, or if you are going to do that, then you need to make sure that the guy times his run. So that was the only risk, I think, when you see that passage of play unfold and they go clean through with that many people. That's
it's almost too easy. You get in your head. You play it offside. Somebody doesn't react on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once they'd gone 2-0 up, I mean, Salzburg were comfortable winners, I thought. You know, Benfica never looked to me like getting back in the game. They showed that they're a good team. They showed that this isn't a shock, but people will look at the early red card and say, ah, yeah, it was a bit of an anomaly. But I'm convinced that this was a great Salzburg performance and they really deserved it. And then they rotated 9 times in the Bundesliga because they knackered everybody out in in Lisbon.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, before we talk about this game, I would just like to address some of the comments that came up on Twitter after we described it as the biggest Bundesliga shock of the season.
Yes.
And there were some people coming back saying, well, Blau-Weiss Linz won their last game. They may well have done it. Was it the last one against VSG Tirol or was it 2 games ago?
I think they meant the last one against Salzburg, which is in 2010.
Yes. So they are completely unbeaten against Salzburg, aren't they, in those two games, which is rare for anyone in Austrian football to be able to say, having played them more than once in the recent past. But I just found those comments a little bit odd because this is the promoted team that have been struggling all season, that have gone away to a team that has just beaten Benfica in the Champions League, a team that hasn't lost in 45 home league games since December 2020, and they won. Now, if you play that game, I think, like 20 times, Blau-Weiss Linz win it that one time. I think you could do that again and it would have a very different result. But the fact is they did win. And in those circumstances, I'm convinced that you won't get a bigger shock this season. So I found that some of the contrarian responses online a bit weird.
I agree. Yeah. I don't think, like, if you look at the teams in the league, you actually can't produce in the calendar a bigger shock than Blau-Weiss. They'd conceded 19 goals, hadn't kept a clean sheet. That's far more goals conceded than anybody else. Up against Salzburg, where their average is, you know, I think their average in home games is like over 3 goals a game for years. For years, they've averaged like 5 before after 10 or 12 games of a season. They've been like literally averaging close to 5 goals in a home game. You know, it's a ridiculous stat that they've got. Yes, there were 9 changes. But I agree, yeah, we did receive quite a lot of messages and comments. I know some of them were tongue-in-cheek and I know some of them were joking, but I think an awful lot of them weren't. And it's just like, take the compliment, man. Like, the team have won. Like, Blau-Weiss fans, chill. I was like, no, I think we were actually favourites in a way. Like, no, you weren't. Like, just take it easy. Like, it's an amazing win. It's not being diminished by us saying it's the biggest shock of the season. Far from it. Maybe that's a German thing, like a cultural difference that they think that is playing it down somehow. But for us, actually, it's playing it up. It's like, it's the biggest and most amazing result. And yes, of course, you can have self-belief when you're a small team. But realistically, did anybody think Blau-Weiss were going to go to the Red Bull Arena and beat Salzburg to actually win? As you say, this home unbeaten run, it's not just getting a draw. Like, nobody beats Salzburg at home. No one. So it's a massive result. Ronny Valdo, really pleased for him. Goal number 3 of the season. Conor Noss had an excellent game, tried his best. But in defence of Gerhard Struber, who made the 9 changes, Salzburg really could have been 2-0 up or 3-0 up even at the break, couldn't they? It's not that they were, you know, battering Blau-Weiss Linz, but they had all the chances you'd expect them to have and they just didn't score any.
Yeah, but then on the flip side, you look at the second half and that Ronny Valdo chance wasn't the only one for Blau-Weiss Linz either. You know, I think there were 3 for Conor Noss in a short period of time. Not what you'd call your classic gilt-edged chances, but opportunities, sniffs. And I just want to talk about the goal a little bit, because one of the things that if somebody said to me, like, what's the first word you associate with Red Bull Salzburg's football? Pressing would be right up there. And I found it really weird that when Ronny Valdo received the ball with his back to goal, 2 to 3 defenders all stood off him. You don't see that from Salzburg very often. And that allowed him to sort of gather himself, pick his space in the bottom corner and shoot. And very well executed, but you shouldn't have that amount of space. And I thought that's very unusual from Salzburg.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually a little bit of shades of the Sakarya goal from Sturm against Salzburg a week before. But you're right. You know the phrase, like, to turn on a dime. Ronny Valdo did not do that. When he got the ball, he turned, like, if I was turning on the ball, it was like, okay, I'm sort of facing the goal, like, touch away from goal, touch again to the side, touch back towards goal to set myself up. And at that point, he was still sort of 5-6 yards outside the box and none of the Salzburg players had moved from the edge of the area. So he really sort of did a bit of a cumbersome turn, had time to pick the spot. as you say, Blauweiss had had a few sighters before, and this time he buried it past Nico Mantel into the far corner. It was a lovely goal. And it's a symptom, as you said, with the other chances, that Blauweiss, after the break, when the game was still 0-0, they really believed it. They were like, hey, do you know what? There's a result in this for us today. And full credit to them, they went out and got it. They weren't just going to be content and maybe, you know, suffer an unlucky, brave 1-0 defeat. Instead, they were brave and they continued to attack and they pushed forward. And the biggest credit I can say for them is that once they were 1-0 up, there was no big Salzburg fight back. I don't remember a single really good chance where I thought Salzburg were going to equalise in the game.
No, I don't remember too many either, to be honest. I think that, you know, most of the highlights reel was Blauweiss Linz going forward in that second period. You have to say, it's an incredible result for Gerald Scheible and the side. Like, no, literally nobody. I was thinking to myself, how many accumulators did that ruin? Because if you've got an accumulator of 10 games and you choose five that are just safe bets to improve your final numbers, you would put Salzburg to win against Blauweiss Linz as just dead set, wouldn't you?
It's a banker, isn't it? We did get lots of fixed game comments as well on Twitter, which I always assume is people who've put bets on who are really annoyed. But you've got to just say hats off to Blauweiss Linz. It's a big 3 points for them. It's an incredible 3 points for them. I will stand by it that it's the biggest Bundesliga shock of the season.
I'll back you up.
And wonderful, just wonderful to see. But obviously, Gerhard Struber is going to come in for some criticism after changing 9 players. Where do you stand on that and the necessity to do that? Because it did obviously cause a Bundesliga headache, a hangover, also for Salzburg, ultimately.
I think this is very outcome-based criticism, and people should criticise the decision for the decision and not based on what happens afterwards. Because as he said in the interview, like, I trust my lads, and there's a lot of young players there. They all need game time throughout the season. 9 is a lot. Changing the goalkeeper as well. Probably Alexander Schlager could have played.
Wouldn't have saved the goal though, would he?
No, probably not, to be fair, no. But I don't necessarily have too much of an issue with that. It's just because they didn't end up winning the game. If you're looking to analyse what happened, that's the first thing you go to.
Yeah, I think that's why I mentioned that they actually did click in the first half. It's so easy to say, oh, 9 changes, the team didn't get any rhythm, they didn't click. They did in the first half, definitely. They were combining brilliantly, running into the box, doing all the things you expect a Salzburg team to do. And as we all know, you know, this is all a young squad. The first team are young, the reserves are young, everybody's young. It's not like, you know, it's not like they've got a massive starting 11 and they just, you know, moved away all the big players to bring these guys in. So they deserved their shot. Ultimately, they didn't take it, especially a bad day perhaps for Kamil Piątkowski, because Piątkowski gave the ball away like 2 or 3 times quite dangerously and ultimately gave the ball away for the goal. But I think Struber will be a bit disappointed that some of those young lads didn't really step up to the plate necessarily.
Yeah, I think so. I think he, you know, they asked him in his post-match interview, this probably wasn't one of the games that, you know, you considered these 3 points in sort of in doubt. And yeah, I can only go along with that, really. It is a surprise. We hoped that result would then, you know, even with our neutral hat on, of course, we just want to see a title race. And I think part of us did hope that Salzburg dropping points against Blauweiss Linz would then pave the way for Sturm Graz to finish the Bundesliga weekend as leaders. Sadly, though, not to be.
It was not to be. It's been a bit of a tough week for Sturm. They were leading against Sporting. Tough opening fixture at home against Sporting. But I was disappointed to see them with the second half lead. And ultimately, that was eroded and Sporting came away with a 2-1 victory, despite Kjell Schreper making some absolutely amazing saves in that game. Really, he was a beast. But in the end, it counted for nothing for Sturm.
Yeah, I mean, Scherpen's double save in particular. I don't know at which point in the game that is. That escapes me right now. But he made a double save that was just simply wonderful. And then, of course, them taking the lead and going into the final 15 minutes. You would have probably said as well, given the group that they're in, Atalanta are probably the strongest team. And getting a result against Sporting Lisbon at home, or sorry, Sporting Club de Portugal, at home would have been, you know, one that they really needed to win, but yeah, not to be.
Yeah, I would definitely have taken a point, but a loss does feel like a bit of a kick in the teeth. A difficult start to Sturm's group stage campaign, and already the chances of finishing above Sporting are pretty slim now. It would take some turnaround. Obviously, there's a long way to go. It's not all doom and gloom just yet, but the group is looking a lot tougher after that home defeat. You know, their good run last year, which still was ultimately unsuccessful in the Europa League, that was based on brilliant home form and a really solid home performance. they weren't able to do it, but then they had the chance to go top of the Bundesliga. I thought it looked like a tough game away against Rapid, coming off the back of a European match. It's never an easy place to go for anyone except Salzburg, and I say that seriously, because going back to the Blau-Weiss Linz defeat for Salzburg, they wouldn't have lost that game against Rapid Vienna. Mm. They wouldn't have lost that game against Austria Vienna. They would only have lost it against... Do you remember in previous seasons, it was like Admira, who were the bogey team. Altach often used to claim points off them. VSK Tirol have been difficult to play against. I think there's something mentally in there where they sort of know that they're going to win and you take your eye off the ball a tiny bit, just tiny percentage points. They never do that against Rapid, quite the opposite. They're much more solid against Rapid. So for Sturm, going to Rapid is a really difficult traditions duel, you know, between these two big old clubs. For Rapid, it's kind of an easy win. And Sturm, ultimately, were a bit lucky to get a point even, I think. I guess they'll be disappointed they didn't finish top of this weekend, but also kind of thankful that they're still unbeaten in the Bundesliga?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, Rapid did have the better of the chances, I think. They obviously took the lead. That was a little bit fortunate in itself. It was a nice cutback from Marco Grull, and then Matthias Seidel's shot came off of Scherpen and then hit Affengruber on its way into the net. So I think that will go down as an Affengruber own goal.
I think it was Schnegg who hit in the
end. Oh, it was a Schnegg own goal, yeah. But then after that, you know, Alexander Prass, they'll be very happy just for that one moment that he didn't end up leaving right at the end of the transfer window. That was some goal as well. But then after that, I do think Rapid shaded it. It wasn't a thriller. I think most of the entertainment being at the Allianz Stadion on Sunday was from the crowd, who produced a series of amazing choreographies to mark the 35th anniversary of Ultras Rapid, some of which were amazing to look at and some of which were outright dangerous. Brings us back to the whole topic of pyrotechnics, Austrian football stadiums. But
it's gone a bit mad lately, hasn't it? The pyrotechnic scene. It wasn't like this when we started the other Bundesliga. It's like every week.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, if you're stewarding a game properly, you don't get in that many fireworks, because there was a firework display. And I think we've often, at many grounds all over the world, you see flares. And flares are obviously dangerous enough, but fireworks that you're setting off in a direction are extremely dangerous. And I don't see how you get that many of them into the stadium without somebody turning a blind eye or something. I know that ultras have a lot of sway at Rapid, but I just don't understand how that happens, to be honest.
Yeah, I've got mixed feelings on it as well. On the one hand, it is cool to see. The atmosphere is really cool. It's kind of a nice thing in a sense. It's a good spectacle. But on the other hand, I know we've sort of probably said these kind of things before because it is a recurring theme now. But this time I just felt like, yeah, it's okay. Celebrate the 35 years of the Ultras. That's an amazing achievement. That's a brilliant fan group. That's wonderful. But like, there's kind of a time and a place. You don't necessarily need to celebrate the Ultras for the whole game long. Mm-hmm. Sorry if you're one of the ultras and you're listening to this, but it's like, have the moment before the game. Have the moment again at the kickoff for the second half. Pick a minute where you want to do it. You know, it's 35 years of the ultras. Pick the 35th minute. Pick the 75th minute because it's Rapid, whatever. But you don't need to do absolutely each and every one of those things.
And you know, there was a moment as well where they were setting off fireworks that were, you know, loud enough, fireworks. And Fally Mayulu missed an absolute sitter. And I'll be honest with you, it was so loud at that time. And they were right in front of...
He was running towards them.
Yeah.
He was like running towards people letting off fireworks in his direction, basically.
Yeah. I mean, who could say what would happen? He might well have missed that without all the fireworks. But I thought to myself, it probably doesn't help.
No, and that was one of those attacks like the Salzburg one we were talking about. Okay, Salzburg was 4 on just the keeper. Mm-hmm. This was 2 on just the keeper. They got in behind. Sturm completely caught out. And it was Kuhn who had a really good game. Mayulu, who he squared it to, stayed onside. And Mayulu put it over. And if you watch the replay and stuff, you can see this like little bits of smoke and sort of pops and stuff going on the ground, like by his feet, actually, but fairly close to the ball when that happens. And yeah, he misses an open goal, puts it up into the crowd. And as you say, just question mark, isn't it? You do wonder, did that have an influence? You can't say.
My final take on the pyrotechnics, because as you say, it's something we talked about before. My final take is, to all the people that say it looks amazing and it creates an amazing atmosphere, that will be the prevailing opinion until someone gets hurt. And that will at some point, that will happen. So, yeah, they do look great. And you take some great photos. And we got loads of great photos at the game for our social media. But I'm personally against that.
Yeah, the last few games have maybe been a little bit overdone, in my opinion, I suppose. I'm not against it in principle, but when you've got a 15-minute delay in the game at Sturm, and now, what was it, a 13-minute delay in the game this time, it's a little bit too much. I say pick your moment, get it done, enjoy it, and there we go.
By the same token, though, you know, obviously they do have good fans, so I don't want to come across as too critical. They clearly care a lot, and the amount of effort that they went to produce that is amazing. But it's obviously just the safety impact that sort of sways my thinking there.
Yeah, that goes for both Sturm and Rapid, of course. Mm. And I think the thing is, in those two games that we've just seen these big firework displays in most recently, I don't think either of them helped their team in any way. Hoffman, the defender, did say, yeah, it was really cool playing in that kind of atmosphere for 90 minutes. Of course, it was a really cool atmosphere. But supporting your team like fervently also creates a really good atmosphere and helps push the team along. You know, without the fireworks, you can still do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced that the big stoppages helped either team, and maybe even in this case caused Maiulu to miss the open goal or helped in his missing of the open goal, I suppose. Ultimately, though, it ended 1-1. That's no wins at all for Rapid since they beat Fiorentina in the first leg. That's quite a long time
now.
It's
a month ago, though.
Yeah. Three draws against, you know, varying strengths of opposition and a loss to Salzburg, plus the loss in the second leg against Fiorentina. They're not even in the top six right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's shocking, isn't it? I think that's the case for both Vienna clubs.
It is, certainly is.
You know, it's bad for Austrian football. Those are two of the best supported clubs in the country. We want to see Vienna derbies come the championship round, not come the relegation round.
Yes, very, very true. And we've got a Vienna derby next week, of all things. Rapid, you know, they never do well in that, but we'll talk about that a little bit more in the second half of this pod. A 1-1 draw between Rapid and Sturm, ultimately kind of a fair result. I think Rapid were closer to winning it. My thoughts on Sturm I gave earlier, I think they'll be having mixed feelings about unbeaten run, good, dropping points, bad. They've dropped points three times already this season, but what can you do? We'll round it up there for part one of this podcast, and we'll be back after a very short break. A very warm welcome back to part two of this week's episode of the Other Bundesliga podcast. Lee, last week I spoke to Simon about our new partnership with Austrian Store UK, and we were waxing lyrical with stories about Almdudler. And I just wanted to give you the chance, as you weren't here last week, do you have any stories or anecdotes about Almdudler? I know that's quite a specific thing to say, but we both found that when we moved to Austria, Austrian people were telling us, like, oh, you've got to try Almdudler because it's this like weird Austrian lemonade and you won't know it. So we both sort of shared that same story.
Oh no, I've got into Almdudler in a big way, actually. Probably an unhealthy way, I reckon. But a friend of mine who visited Vienna a few years ago really likes Almdudler and has actually started ordering it from the Austrian food store in the UK. So I already know of somebody who fell in love with Almdudler and has been purchasing it.
Very, very nice. Yeah, as I said to Sai last week, that is actually the reason that austrianfood.co.uk, as it's called, that's the reason it started. Because the owners of austrianfood.co.uk just absolutely loved Almdudler. It was that good. And they had to get it when they were in the UK. They had to still have it, despite it being a very Austrian, a quintessentially Austrian product. So they imported it. It went very, very well for them. So then they started importing it in a much bigger way. And now they do all kinds of other things as well. If you're maybe British living in Austria and you've got, you know, no room in your suitcase, you don't need to take everything back. You don't need to take all your Mozart Kugel and Mannerschnitten back. You can just order them from the UK. You can get some for your family who are in the UK as well. And if you go to austrianfood.co.uk, you can actually use the code OTHERBUNDESLIGA to get 15% off as well, which is really awesome. That's very generous of them to give us that code. So if you want to get any of those Austrian kind of things, that's food, confectioneries, drinks, there's beer as well. Lots of crates of beer can be bought. And there's also homewares, Austrian homewares, books, all that kind of thing. So if you're looking for anything along those lines, you can get it at austrianfood.co.uk and use the code OTHERBUNDESLIGA to get a discount. On to what we are here to talk about in part two, the remaining games in the Bundesliga. We had Altach 2, Austria Vienna 1, we had Austria Klagenfurt 1, Austria Lustenau 0, and VSG 2, VRC 3. The one that stands out to me the most is probably Altach 2, Austria Vienna 1, a very contentious game with a lot of big decisions. What was your sort of overall take on that game, Lee?
It was a flying start, wasn't it? I thought that the corner, which was scored by Johannes Handel, was a bad bit of defending, because he actually opened up and turned his whole body and waited for it to cross his body and then hit his left foot, which was very nicely steered into the corner. But the defender should be cutting that out, especially at the near post.
He had a big look of surprise on his face as well. handle as if like he didn't really expect it to get to him.
Yeah.
And he turned to turn it in. It was like, well, this won't reach me anyway. It did. It hit him and it went in. And he was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, I think maybe it's. I think we're doing him an injustice to say it hit him, because I think he knew what he was doing.
Yes.
But it was a proper look of delight on his face, sort of not quite Florian Flecker versus Liverpool levels of delight. But yeah, that was a really nice moment. And then Altac equalised pretty much instantly through.
Yeah, the look of delight didn't last long, did it?
No. Lucas Fadinger, that was a good finish as well. But yeah, this game just got off to a furious start. And in fact, all of the goals are inside the opening 15 minutes. So I thought we were in for a much more high-scoring game here.
Yeah, we got some questions about the refereeing decisions in this game and the refereeing performance in this game. Because another of the big turning points was the 15th minute penalty. Andreas Gruber, it hit him on the hand in the penalty area. Penalty dispatched by Mike Steven Beere down the middle. 2-1 to Altac at that point. That's how it finished, ultimately. For me, there were so many big penalty decisions in this game. Austria were pretty hard done by. I think I want to abolish this thing. I think it was in the rule book. I swear I read this in the rule book at some point. Where, do you remember around World Cup, was it World Cup 2018? They changed the ruling on penalties and they said it's going to be different, a little bit different from now on with handballs and stuff in the box. I think if there's an immediate contact on the ball just before, like within a meter of it hitting you or something, it shouldn't be a penalty. Yes, you've got to have your hands by your side. Yes, you've got to have your hands in a neutral position. But you can't always have them in a neutral position. It would be ridiculous to be like waiting at the back post and have your hands like behind your back. Yeah, the first man deflecting or trying to deflect a cross or something, yeah, they should have their hands behind their back. You know you're trying to put your body in the way of the ball and not your hand. Fine. But when it's just hit off somebody right in front of you, as it did in this case, somebody goes in for a header and then it hits Andreas Gruber on the arm immediately after that, after the ball's deflected. I don't think you can have your, you know, you can't be expected to always have your hands in a sort of sensible position. It's just not realistic, I don't think. I think there's a bit of like a common sense element missing in that. So I thought that was really harsh.
Yeah, I mean, the whole handball thing is something that I think that football fans across the world are still talking about, because nobody knows actually what a handball is. You know, you see some almost identical situations, some given, some not. There was a lot of grumbling amongst the journalists at the Allianz Stadion later in the day after that game. You know, at halftime in the Rapid game, people were talking about the decisions in the Austria-Vienna game. I think it's safe to say that that referee didn't impress too many people.
No, there were other big, big moments, and they pretty much all went against Austria. Ganush hit the crossbar and was then sort of fouled, in inverted commas, because it wasn't given as a foul, as he tried to convert from close range. That was another one for me, which you definitely see them given, probably more often than not. But I'll go back to the last one that we mentioned against Liverpool. So I think, to be consistent with myself, I'd have to say that's not a penalty for me. Ganush has his shot, hits the crossbar, and is then in the sort of very latter stages of a challenge. There's light contact with him from behind. I don't disagree with Austria Vienna. I think they're given more often than not, but I don't necessarily think they should be. And then Austria got a really another one to make them feel very bitter when Ati Nuhiu touched the ball as he controlled it against his own hand in the box and then was able to play it out of the area and clear it. I don't even know what to think about that one. If that's not a penalty, apparently it's not. You know, the referee's gone and had a look at it. You get a clear sight of him controlling the ball up onto his own hand. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. I can't believe Austria haven't, you know, they've come out on the wrong side of all of those.
Yeah, I think based on what you see given, I was very surprised that that wasn't given. That was probably, was that the most contentious of the penalty decisions, do you think?
I'm not even sure, to be honest. Yeah. Maybe all of them. Probably, for me, maybe the Gruber handball that ultimately led to Altac getting the win. But Altac certainly got the rub of the green, let's call it that way, because in the second half, Gruber's bad day continued. He actually scored an equaliser for 2-2, and it was ruled out because, guess what? It hit his hand in the box. Just not their day. Simply not their day. And not their season either. The game ended in a bit of an unsavoury fashion. No, that makes it sound like there were kind of flare-ups and brawls and stuff, which there weren't. But Ati Nuhiu, the striker, had one moment which we must mention, where he did some brilliant control, turned in the box and smashed the ball against the crossbar. That would have made it a worthy win for Altac, but it didn't go in. Nuhiu was then sent off for a second yellow card, and Altac will miss him. Galvao was sent off for a second yellow card for Austria as well. And I think Mirko Kost, the backup goalkeeper, was also sent off on the bench with the frustrations of losing 2-1 at Altac. But Austria-Vienna, I know Rapid are not in the top six, but, you know, Rapid seem to be in a completely different place still to Austria. Austria have got 5 points from 8 games. They cannot buy a win for love nor money, and they are properly looking nowhere near the top six at the moment. This is really, really trying times for them.
So Austria-Vienna haven't won in the league since, was it like the second game or something? And that was like away to Lustenau,
who have
not won a game yet this season.
They seem to genuinely be one of the worst teams in the Bundesliga at the moment. It's not like a freak thing, you know. They actually honestly seem to be like maybe the third or fourth worst team in the league.
I have to say, like, I know there were reasons for the decision, but the loss of Manfred Schmidt as coach, I thought he was at least, I felt like he had them on some kind of right track. I'm sure there are lots of fans that will point to say X, Y, Z, no, that wasn't the case, but I don't know. They're just a club that seemed to lurch from one problem to another, and it's a shame.
They are. I thought Michael Wimmer had them on the right track, but that was his link-up with Tabakovic, basically, putting the trust in Tabakovic to go out and be a natural-born goal scorer. And that's the biggest positive for Austria-Vienna in recent times. They've gone and let him go for nothing, as they've done with so many players. And ultimately, they're paying the price right now. They can't find goals very consistently. They can't hold on to leads. They've hardly got any points. They are in big trouble, and they've got a derby against Rapid Vienna coming up next weekend, so they'll almost certainly have 3 more points come next weekend.
Yeah, although where is that derby taking place?
It is at the Generali Arena.
Okay.
They win either way.
Yeah, but they tend to do very well in Hütteldorf, don't they?
True.
Yeah.
Still, I don't know. You know, you look at their recent results being horrible, and I still somehow back them to then go and do it against Rapid. But yeah, you're right. It's not like Rapid are playing in Hütteldorf. Anyway, the other games, Austria Klagenfurt continued their decent start to the season with a very hard-fought 1-0 win against winless Lustenau. Very difficult for them. They actually gave this a very good go and really challenged Klagenfurt. I think Klagenfurt were a little bit fortunate to take all 3 points, but they did. Nonetheless, and the final game, VSK 2, VADC 3, featuring another one of those handballs, which I think is harsh, and all the commentators, all the referees, all the pundits are like, yeah, Stonewall, definite handball. But for me, it's another one. It was Justin Forst who just come on. I feel a bit bad for VSK in that game. They'd come back from 2-0 down, levelled up at 2-2. Forst came on as the attacker to be like, yeah, go on, try and win it for us. And instead, in his own penalty area, cross came in. Zimmermann went for a header right in front of Forst. Zimmermann made a contact with the header and then it hit Forst's hand, which was not by the side of his body. Again, I've got to put it in that category of it's just come off somebody else right in front of you. You can't necessarily expect to have your hands down by your side in that position when you're jumping and you're not the first man trying to block. So, yes, by the rule book, it is an absolute stonewall penalty. But for me, I still think those types of penalties are harsh. Nonetheless, credit to Benny Zimmermann who stepped up, stuck it away in stoppage time to give VRC the win. VRC are quietly climbing up the table a little bit now, aren't they?
Yeah, since our trip to Hartberg, at least, because they were pretty abject in that 3-0 home defeat against Hartberg. But since then, they got that 3-3 draw with Rapid, and yeah, now beaten VSG, who themselves aren't having a very good season, to be honest. So, yeah, they're slowly climbing, is my really insightful assessment.
Yeah, the struggles go on for VSG, but VADC have scored 3 times in both of their last 2 games, so some decent points on the board for them. Let's turn very quickly to the Cup this week before we finish off and wrap it up for this week's other Bundesliga pod. This week, everyone's playing in Cup Round 2, and you will, of course, know by now, but it is a Round 2 with a lot more scrutiny on it than normal because Austria Salzburg are playing against RB. The big Salzburg duel. You can't call it a derby. People are already getting very angry online about Salzburg fans not being real fans. It's going to be a pretty heated and contentious thing. The neutrals are all going to feel in favour of Austria Salzburg. I guess that's just the way it is when you're Red Bull. But will Austria Salzburg be buoyed by the fact that Blau-Weiß Linz actually went and beat Salzburg this weekend? Does it make the chances of a shock a little bit greater?
I think it probably lessens them because it's a reality shock, isn't it? You know, you have to, as Gerhard Struber kept saying, wir müssen an unsere Grenzen gehen, you know, need to go to our limits to win any game. And so I think it's probably going to be something of a reality shock for the Salzburg players. I think it's really nice that there are going to be lots of international media. There's lots of eyes around the world on this game. And if you think about it, if you picked any fixture in Austrian football, I can't think of one other than this one where journalists would be coming from other countries to watch them. And that's because we've pretty much been waiting 18 years for this to happen, ever since Red Bull bought Austria Salzburg and then the Phoenix Club started life in the seventh tier. Realistically, they were never going to meet in the league, so it depended on a cup draw. And now it's finally happened. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I hope it's a really emotional game, but I hope it also goes off without a hitch. And by a hitch, I mean, obviously, any fan violence.
Should we put a little bet on there being another big firework display at this game?
Well, Austria Salzburg fans, they do have, you know, very passionate support. After this draw was made, their membership numbers soared, didn't they? And, you know, it's going to be inside the Untersberg Arena in Grödig. It's going to be really tightly packed. I imagine that there'll be some fireworks, some banners. You know, Austria Salzburg ones are not fans are not ones to keep their thoughts quiet, are they? So I'm sure that we will be seeing something.
And I think the Red Bull fans will be quite defensive of their club, I would imagine, too. They're not just going to stand there and take it. There'll be a lot of, basically, we don't care, we win everything, we're going to beat you kind of sentiments, I would certainly expect.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be kept very separate, aren't they? I think it's a 10% away allocation, so that'll be around 400 fans, and they're all getting buses from the Red Bull Arena straight to the away sector, which will be strictly policed, and then they'll put them back straight on the buses. Obviously, the aim is for there to be no contact between the two groups of fans at all, and I think that's probably the only way to ensure this goes off smoothly.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be well managed. We will be able to report back as to whether it was indeed well managed after the game has taken place. By the time you're listening to this, it might well already be happening. Do check it out if you're around on Tuesday evening. That's the ÖFB Cup Round 2 game between Austria Salzburg and Red Bull Salzburg. There are obviously a full complement of other ÖFB Cup ties. The only disappointing thing about the Salzburg one for me, Lee, is that it clashes with Austria women against France women in the Women's Nations League. 9,000 plus tickets sold at the Generali Arena for that one.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good one. We will at least be represented there because Simon will be at that game. So we've got all bases covered on Tuesday evening.
We have indeed. We told them that they could have done this. The ÖFB could have done this years ago. 9,000 fans at the Generali Arena. This was obvious. But I'm glad it's come true and I'm glad they're doing it. I'm looking forward to reporting on that game. The Bundesliga games coming up, including the Derby, the Salzburg Cup games, all the other Cup games, everything. It's all going off. We'll be back next week to report it on the other Bundesliga podcast. Thanks for listening.